The first 3 weeks of the kids being home, I was like, oh, the world is my oyster. I'm gonna get so much done. I had this intricate schedule for them. I'm like, okay, no screen time. This hour you're gonna be reading. This hour you're gonna be, and I even have a picture that I put on Insta, like, pandemic day one, you know. And I even made my daughter, I was like, oh, start a coronavirus journal. So I have, it kind of all went down. Around week three, I was like, you can have 10 hours of screen time. Mommy needs to finish her postdoc.
Shiny Epi people. I'm Lisa Bodner. I'm really happy that you're here today. You can find our show on Instagram and Twitter at Shiny Epi People, where I post some other content. And if you want to throw a couple of dollars my way, you can go on patreon.com/shinyepipeople. Thanks to the new patrons, especially Eric Lofgren, who I am going to get on this show one day, even though he is an extreme introvert. Today, I'm speaking with Noor Zainamar. Noor earned her PhD in Epi and Biostats at the University of Albany School of Public Health. She completed postdoctoral work at Columbia University in the Mailman School of Public Health and the Irving Medical Center. Just recently, Noor joined Rutgers Cancer Institute of New Jersey as an instructor of medicine in the section of cancer epidemiology and health outcomes. Noor is interested in understanding the role of genetics, the environment, lifestyle factors, and their interplay on breast cancer etiology and prognosis. Today, Noor and I talk about how it does take a village to raise kids with two parents with demanding careers, and how she found that village in New York City. She also wanted to talk about her need for safe spaces to express her religion and culture, and her ultimate acceptance of her own unique qualities as a Muslim Arab American. As you'll hear from this conversation, Noor is an absolute delight and so engaging. I hope you enjoy this chat.
Your smile is so, it's brightening my room, and you're not even here.
Oh, thank you. My name is means light in Arabic, so that's funny that you said that.
Is it? Thank you for making time.
It's so nice to like meet you. Although I did see your talk about pregnancy. I don't do any of the research, but pregnancy, yeah, weight gain. I went there for personal reasons because I had gained a lot of weight during,
okay,
my pregnancy.
Yeah.
And my doctor was not concerned. And I'm like, I want to go see what the experts think.
Okay.
So I learned a lot. And then I was like, I guess I still gained too much weight. So, but it was such an interesting talk. I do remember.
Thank you. That's really nice of you.
I actually tried to steal one of the lunch sandwiches. And then the person that was helping put together the talk, who's like amazing, I love him, he saw me and he's like, actually, those are for the students. It was like, and you're not a, like, you can go to the talk, to the lunch with students if you want with her, but like, you need to leave. So I got so embarrassed. So I was like running out of there because I was like, I can't see him. And then there weren't even good sandwiches. Like, they're just had to share that.
You probably don't remember this. There was a woman there who has been in the field for a really long time.
Yes.
And she was totally heckling me during this.
I actually remember that because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy this is not me.
And then she was just challenging every single thing that I said.
Yes, I remember that.
But like, it's literally seared into my brain, like how uncomfortable it felt.
Yes.
And so she was just like, excuse me, everyone in the room should know that I'm the expert.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. So I was mortified for you in the back. I was mortified for me in the back after trying to steal a sandwich. And I was learning about all the weight that I gained in pregnancy. But it was a great talk. It was a great talk. You held your own.
Thank you. You have a pretty interesting path about how you got to where you are. You have a very busy partner and you have kids. It sounds to me like you're the default parent.
How does that all work?
We both have super demanding jobs. You know, it's just a different nature. So because he's a medical professional, like he needs to be in a hospital to be able to do his job. And I'm at my computer 24/7. So when we had children, it kind of just like made sense that he wouldn't be the parent responsible for things like pickup or drop off or daycare emergencies, because he just couldn't run and go if there's a patient on the table bleeding. Sure. But I can pause writing, as annoying and disruptive as it is. So I, like you said, became the default parent. But I think like the most important lesson that I learned, and this is going to sound so cliche, is that it takes a village.
Yeah.
So when I moved to New York City, I literally knew zero people. And I learned quickly that I needed to create my own village and define what that meant for
me. That's
great. And so I kind of had like a mentor, a New York City mentor, and it ended up being my daughter's preschool director.
That's amazing.
I would call her and I would cry on the phone. And yeah. So she actually ended up connecting me to lots of other parents. We ended up having this great network, and we kind of like leaned on each other emotionally and logistically. And I guess an example of when the village really came to my rescue is I was on a plane. My babysitter never showed up. And it's like 5 o'clock and the place is closed, and they call me and they're like, can you call your husband? Because he's not answering. He's scrubbed. He's like in the middle of a surgery. He cannot leave. I have this network, backup babysitters. I called both of them, and they, of course, why would they be able to go?
At a moment's notice.
At a moment's notice. Yeah. I ended up calling this mom from the village. Like, can you pick up, you know, my daughter? And so she sent her wife, who picked her up, who kept my daughter safe until my husband was able. And I think he didn't end up going to their house until like maybe 10 or 11.
Wow.
So I guess that's the most challenging part for me, is this feeling that I need to balance all of it alone most of the time. The rewarding part, like how close I got to my children, you know, and then also, not going to lie, my time off. So when my husband is not at the hospital and he's not on call, he's on call for the children. Mm-hmm. So he is with them 24/7. I do nothing. And that's kind of how we co-parent, and how we kind of, I don't want to say the word equal, but how we kind of like, you know, balance it out for us. Like that's our balance, is parenting duties. So that's when I have my time off and I just go on dates with myself and do things by myself.
When I was married, this is one of the things that I found really challenging, this like revolving door parenting, which was like, as soon as you come home, I leave.
Yeah. So that's actually something, I'll be honest, we struggle with. Pre-pandemic, we have like a schedule of when we go on like our own date nights, or we like carve out once a year, we'll go somewhere just us, you know. Well, no, not just me and him, because my mom won't. my mom won't keep my kids anymore. So
why?
She's like, your kids. So she's like, your kids are crazy. Like, I can't. She's like, I can't do this anymore. She was really great, because during my dissertation, she did keep Dania for like 5 months while I wrote the dissertation. So she kind of like feels like her time she's put in.
Yes, I know that.
So it is challenging, and it's not all roses. There's ups and downs.
Sure.
It's hard. You know, sometimes, you know, both of us have these resentful moments of the other's job.
Absolutely.
Just to be completely honest, I'm not like, oh, this is amazing. No, like, we just have to keep lines of communication open.
How did you set up your village?
It took me a while to figure out that I needed a village. I would say my daughter was 5, and I was like falling apart at this point.
Yeah.
I actually took a year off in between my PhD and my postdoc, because I thought I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, because I didn't think it was doable. And then I was like, I don't want to do this. It was kind of like the NYC mentor that kind of like told me, she was like, you need to like put yourself out there. For me, it wasn't that hard, because I'm a huge extrovert and I weird
no,
people out.
I could never tell.
So for me, like, you know, the initial introductions, though, because I knew nobody in New York and I didn't want to come off as like you know, dumb or whatever. There's that. And then the thing is like, you can't just have one village. So like, you need to have different groups of friends, because sometimes the village is busy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in New York, over like the 5.5 years that I was there, I ended up having so many different groups of friends. My best friend that I ended up making in New York, I actually met on the bus, but she ended up...
Oh, I love that.
She ended up being my neighbor, also like a faculty at Columbia by chance, also wow. struggling, also with a busy partner. You know, we're so many commonalities. Our kids went to the same school. And I actually called her on my birthday this weekend, and I'm like, I need you here. And she's like, yeah, I'm not coming. But, you know, I miss her so much. But like, so she was like part of it. But it's kind of like putting yourself out there, which is so hard for so many people. And yeah. if you can't do it in the beginning, which I couldn't in New York, is finding somebody that will help make those connections. Another person in my village, the way that mm-hmm. I found her was through camp, my daughter's summer camp. Mm-hmm. She left her number in my daughter's backpack, and anybody Aww. Else wouldn't have called it. But I'm like, whatever. Like, I like yeah. this girl because this is what I would do.
Yeah,
so
me
I
too.
Called her and we became best friends.
Yes.
You know, and it's work, and it's a process. Everybody is kind of like struggling like you are.
One of the things that you wanted to talk about was how you navigate spaces where you're the only visible Muslim Arab.
Yeah.
What did you want to share about that with listeners?
Yeah, so I think this really just relates to a theme that I've heard on this podcast, and something that it really goes back to creating safe spaces where everyone is comfortable being themselves. And that's why representation is like so important. I mean, there's so many podcast guests that you had that talked about this, but it was Will's episode on Shiny Epi People that really resonated with me in that sense. This idea of having to navigate spaces that really just maybe weren't made for you. One of the things in his story was when he talked about walking into a party and being the only same sex. Every party that I go to, or we had to go to this fancy gala. There's like thousands of people. I was the only one with hijab in the room. Mm. And I remember one of the people like saw me like being really nervous in the, you know, like in the mirror. Mm. And he's like, listen, I know it's hard to be different and that you think that you don't belong here, but you look beautiful and don't worry about what these people think. And I'm like, oh my. So it's just this idea like that really resonated with me, because I feel sometimes guilty, like being like, nobody cares that you're in a hijab, nor nobody cares, just let it go. But then he kind of validated my experience.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, we all have our things. For some of us, it's our religion. For some of us, it's something unrelated, you know, that nobody knows about. I think for Muslims in particular, I mean, there's so many different examples that I can talk about and throughout the years. A small example, particularly for Muslims, is the fact that many practicing Muslims pray 5 times a day. But it's a little complicated because our prayers are not, they don't follow a calendar time, and the times vary day by day and season to season, and they really need to be done within a certain time frame. So for me, literally navigating a space, and up until this point, really just having a shared office, is that I'm always scoping out places to pray and not miss the prayer time. And it's really important to me. And so I plan my day around it. And in the summer, it's like super simple because the days are long. But in the winter, it gets more complicated because the days are short. And I end up doing like 3 to 5 of my prayers at work. So I've actually prayed in lots of crazy places, empty classrooms, stairwells. Some buildings have prayer spaces, some don't. But sometimes even if they have a prayer space, it's not convenient if you have back-to-back meetings to run in between, sure. especially in the winter. So again, like that's why I feel like representation is important, not particularly for prayer, but because it creates this environment where you can feel safe to ask for the things that you need and not be seen as like weird or whatever, like, or or needy. You know what I mean? Like you can, you feel safe. So for me, like one summer, this really brought me a lot of joy is we had a summer student in one of the summers of my postdoc. She also prayed and she sought me out privately because I was a visibly identifiable Muslim woman because of my hijab. And she asked me where she could get her prayer in. And so the hijab for her was this tangible sign of allyship, if you will, and feeling comfortable and being able to bring her whole self to work and not feel like she's being weird or like, you know, she's asking for special accommodations or anything like that. So just hearing Will talk about it, I'm like, it's okay to talk about this stuff. And it's not just okay. It's courageous. It's important. And I appreciated it so much. It's like, oh, we're all human and it's okay. Yeah. And nobody's going to be like, here's this whiny hijabi, you know. And I also recognize, you know, I'm white passing. People always think I'm white. Also sitting with my own privilege. So he said something about that too. He said, I'm privileged as a white man. And I'm like, yes, I'm also privileged as a white passing Arab. Like in any moment I could take off my scarf, I would just blend in. But my friends that are Black Muslim Americans, they don't have that privilege. So also like hearing that aspect of it is like recognizing your privilege, recognizing there's parts of this that are hard about your identity. And yeah, it was just really validating.
Noor, when you share your story, what do you hope is the consequence of that?
Yeah, no, I hope there's just more kindness and understanding for people that may not look like you, may not worship or find peace in the world, because really that's what I think religion's about, like you, compassion for different struggles, but also recognizing that we're all human. We all want the same things, really, not just judging a book by its cover. You know, I am Muslim, I am Arab American, but I'm also an epidemiologist and I'm also here to do science. And I hope that I can bring my whole self to work.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. The older you get, not to curse, but less of F's you give. So I'm like, you know what? This is who I am. I'm Muslim, also Arab American. I'm proud of that. Like, I'm not suppressing any part of myself anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And before I kind of like, you know, especially when I was in college, I kind of like trying to prove myself like, hey, I'm just like you guys. But now I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I'm different and that's okay. And that's what makes me great. I'm like, you know, so that's why I feel really comfortable talking about it because of where I am in my life.
Noor, what do you do to keep yourself sane amidst all of this? You talked about prayer being really important. What else do you do?
So I love cooking Syrian dishes. My parents are from Damascus, Syria. They came here before I was born. And I love cooking Syrian dishes because it connects me to happier times of my summers in Damascus before the war in Syria. And I just feel like connected to my ancestors and all my relatives that I didn't get to really know because I grew up in the U.S. You know, when I'm cooking, I have to say, though, I'm getting a little crazy about it and I'm turning into my Syrian grandmother.
What is she crazy
okay,
about?
Okay, so in my both actually of my grandmother's houses, they have an extra separate freezer that they have all the extra stuff that they need for cooking. So they can whip up an amazing Syrian meal in any season, anytime. And so when we were in New York, we had a 900 square foot apartment. And I looked up freezers and I told my husband we're buying an extra freezer. Blanket over it and you won't see it. He vetoed it. Really?
Did
yes.
he?
Yes. Okay. So I'm trying Good to break him in now. But like, yeah, I love Syrian cooking. I also love like discovering Syrian restaurants. So we just moved to New Jersey and I found this Syrian like takeout place. I went and ordered takeout from there and it was incredible. And me and the woman ended up calling me the next day. She's like, I don't have a lot of Syrians that come in. But, aww, you know, the fact that you love my food is like, I was like, what? I'm not like a restaurant critic. But she found my number because it was like through Grubhub or something. She called me and she was like, you made my day.
Oh,
come back. And, you know, there's some kibbeh, like these little fried things. I don't know. And she was like, kibbeh on the house, on me. Just come back and have coffee. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then I never went because pandemic.
Right. Show me your vaccination card and then we can talk.
It's like, I love Syrian cooking, but I'm not going to get COVID for it.
What is your favorite dish to cook?
So, like, my favorite dish is this thing called fettet magdous. It's like these stuffed eggplants, and then they're layered with like sauce and a yogurt, and then and then over like crunchy pita bread, and then have pine nuts and parsley on top. So I do that every once in a while. There's something called sayadia. It's basically just like a fish rice pilaf. I also love I make mlouchia once a week, which is also not a dish that's just Syrian, that, you know, Egyptians cook it too, other Arabs cook it. I do love grape leaves, but I'm too lazy to make them. It's like, it's not hard, it's labor intensive. Yeah, I told my husband that this weekend I might make grape leaves, just like my once a year grape leaf make, if they will all help me roll them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's a special roll, and again, different, like so many different types of Arabs have grape leaves.
Noor, what's your wake up ritual?
So I wake up, I drink like 6 cups of coffee.
Okay, hold on. You on coffee. What is you not on coffee?
Don't talk to me if I don't have coffee.
Really? You don't want to be talked to?
So like it's just a duller version of this. But I blame my grandmother, because I've been obsessed with coffee since I was little, because she used to take these like little tea biscuits and dip them in Arabic coffee, which is kind of the same thing as like Turkish coffee, like that really intense coffee, dip them and then give them to me when I was like 3, 4, 5.
Wow.
So I was raised on coffee. It's probably why I'm not tall.
Why you're not tall?
I'm just kidding.
It stunted your growth?
But yeah, that's my wake-up ritual. I'm like obsessed with coffee.
What's an unusual compliment you receive often?
My friends all tell me that I have resting nice face. And it's really a blessing and a curse. Both strangers and acquaintances divulge the most personal information to me. Okay.
Simply because you're just sitting there like with a pleasant look on your face?
I'm just like, oh God, my resting nice face struck again. The thing the thing is like, I'm so extroverted, so I'm here for it. I love hearing people's stories. I feel like everyone has a story and they just want to share it, and that's how we're human. But sometimes I just cannot. Like, it's too much. You're sharing, you're oversharing.
When you have the resting nice face, are you also making eye contact? Is that part of the problem?
So I think that's what one of my friends told me. She's like, you just make too much eye contact. I'm like, I can't help it. So
my New Year's resolution is to stop making so much eye contact.
But I'm just so curious.
I hear you.
Yes.
Yeah, because I often, like, if I'm driving, you know, I'll like look in the rearview mirror and see myself, and I'm like, my God, I look so mean right now. And I don't feel mean, but boy, do I look mean.
Oh, no, I don't think you ever look mean.
I do. I look super mean. COVID uniform.
You know, everybody about on COVID, you know, when COVID started, was talking about soft pants and hard pants.
Yeah.
I've been wearing soft pants my whole life. Ever since I became a mom, I've been in yoga pants or some sort of soft pants.
I have these, like, whatever, yoga pants.
I love
that
it.
I would like literally never wear outside of my house. They're way too tight. I have them roll down like the waistband because they hurt my stomach. PC or Mac?
PC.
Me too. But aren't you kind of embarrassed by it?
I am. Especially like if somebody's using like a Linux server and they're like, oh, you have a You have a Windows? I did a project with some bioinformatics people, and they're like all Mac users. And I'm like, can you teach me how to get on the server?
Is your office messy?
Yes.
That's the only acceptable answer.
Yes, and I don't have enough filing cabinets yet, so I just have stacks of different papers and stuff on the floor, but I did make sure to have some.
To put them behind you! I love
Sorry,
that.
I'll show you.
Okay. Nor, your room is trashed.
It's trashed!
Turn it again. I want to see all the items.
How can I live like this?
Oh my gosh.
So we did move in 5 weeks ago and.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But also, like, the boxes were there for like maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And I was like, at what point is it no longer socially acceptable to keep telling everyone I work with, oh yeah, it's still unpacking?
Do you have your phone nearby?
I do.
I'm going to ask you which of these things you have on your phone, okay?
Yes.
The Instagram app.
Yes.
A weather app.
Yes.
Is your ringtone a song?
No.
Do you have a picture of a pet?
I don't have any pets.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a picture of children.
We don't care.
I didn't ask that!
Do you have a selfie?
Yes!
Do you have a contact with the name Z? Oh my god, your last name is Z!
Yes! I do! All of my family!
Is your battery life greater than 10%?
Yes.
Do you have a to-do list on your phone?
No.
I'm like, no. Do you have a fitness app?
Yes.
Do you have a picture as your screen lock?
Yes, but my screen lock, it's half.
Oh my god. Can I please take a screenshot of that? Because it's incredible.
Oh my god.
Okay, hold it up.
I never centered the photo.
You can see, like, nothing, and then half your daughter's face and body. That's it. Did you miss a call during the recording right now?
Wait, recents? No.
Okay, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I chose you. It's okay. Nora, it was so lovely to meet you.
Oh my god, so lovely. I hope we can meet in person one day.
I can see it by your resting nice face. Now I want to tell you all my secrets.
Yes! Costco is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, I have been to it twice. We have a membership, but like I had never gone to a Costco before we moved to New Jersey. The first time we went to Costco, my children were acting like they were in Disneyland. They were like, this is amazing. We're so happy we moved to New Jersey.